And we are live in the GSU Panther Zone on Blog Talk Radio. Of course, that makes me Jeremy the Impact York, your hostess with the mostest, and I promise you the jokes only get worse from here. Like I said, we are live. This is going to be the season finale. We're going to take a little bit of time off. Probably late January will be our next show. We're going to hopefully have Coach Greg Frady on at that point. I know you guys request him all the time for him to be on. I'm trying my best to link that up, get Coach on before the actual show starts, but you know, we'll take time for the holidays. But for now, we want to finish up the football season, and the only way I know to finish it up is to bring on the guy who knows way, way more about this than I do. And of course, he is 247 Sports Zone, Ben Moore. How you doing, Ben?
I'm great, Gary, man. Appreciate you having me.
Hey, no problem. Like I said, I learned it from Colin Cowherd, and it's a great strategy that in order to have a good show and to feel like people learn things, you get people on here that know a lot more about things than you do, and henceforth why you're a regular guest.
Well, I appreciate that. It's certainly been a busy, busy time for the football program, and quite honestly, very, very newsworthy. This is the holiday for most, and happy holidays to you and your family and certainly your listeners. But it's been something every few hours. As it's funny, we call this the recruiting dead period, but it's anything but dead. More news flies every couple hours, it seems like, and it's a whole lot of fun. This is the season we live for. It what we call our recruitniks, the people who are recruiting.
The recruitniks, I like that. But you know, before we get into the organized chaos, the controlled chaos, I guess. That is the new coaching staff, as apparently, like you said, it's literally like every handful of hours we seem to find a new piece of that puzzle. But before we do, let's talk a little bit about this football season, kind of wrap things up. You know, we're finally able to kind of wrap our heads around everything that did happen. Obviously, it was more of a down year than an up year, but there were some things to take away from this.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. And something – I think the most important thing, I ran the numbers yesterday, 19 players committed and signed with Georgia State last fall and then February. So you had some, you know, junior college transfer comes in, and you look at the roster, certainly the marketing slogan was take the next step. And that was, you know, that put also a lot of pressure on the program, quite frankly. And the way the first month of the season went, it wasn't shocking. It wasn't surprising by no means. Three of the first four games, most people looked at the schedule and said this was going to be difficult. I think just the way, you know, the team basically kind of fell on itself, and there was just reoccurring issues over and over again. Special teams failures, extra points, blocked field goals, things that just weren't getting corrected. Charlie Cobb decided to make a change right before Georgia Southern. And I had texted somebody about a week and a half earlier and asked them if that was a possibility. And quite honestly, got a text back and said that's really the only solution that makes sense, just because you can provide a little bit different name, a little bit different voice, loosen practice up a little bit. Not to say, you know, Coach Miles's practices weren't loose, but they were a lot more businesslike. They were a lot more NFL-like. You and I have both been out there in spring and in fall seeing practices, and we appreciate Coach Miles's accessibility, certainly. And I have also talked to Coach Miles since he was relieved of his duties, and you know, I'll keep the majority of that conversation just to us. But, you know, he understood, and he understood certainly, you know, winning and losing at a high level, and the expectations were a lot higher. He genuinely thought this was going to be a top three or top four team in the Sun Belt. And when it didn't finish at that level, Charlie Cobb wanted to make a decision and go ahead and let him go and have one more year on his contract. And quite honestly, try to get a jump on, you know, going out and finding his right candidate. And I think the biggest thing and kind of how we can pivot for this, if you're interested, we heard last year, you know, really the first part of November 2015, that Sean Elliott was the guy that Charlie Cobb wanted, and that his interim time there in South Carolina taking over for Steve Spurrier was an audition for this job, to really see how he handles everything and go from there. So, that was a huge deal from there. And I know Charlie mentioned that there were seven candidates that interviewed. We know the majority of them. They have been rumored out there. And, one of my favorite things is sources yell the loudest this time of year. You don't hear them all the time, but you hear them a lot during this silly season. We knew about that. And quite frankly, I mean, I haven't talked to Charlie about this specifically, but I think it's a situation where, he wanted Elliot. Elliot would have to tell him no in order for him to move on. And he interviewed and did due diligence for other people, but, went with the guy that he really wanted. So now those two are tied together, in my opinion, and basically on the successes of Coach Elliot and his staff. Charlie Cobb will certainly have to look at and we'll have to answer to his bosses and President Becker, et cetera.
Absolutely, and we will come back to talk a little more about Coach Elliott. But I had a quick question. I think if anybody knew this, you might know the answer to it. Does the NCAA have a Rooney Rule or anything like that?
Not at all. Just really depends on the school. Of course, the Rooney Rule is a specific NFL piece there. Not really that I can think of. I mean, I'm just trying to go up through the seven candidates that interviewed and specifically or at least were rumored. And there was a lot of interest in this job. And that's something that you really didn't have 4 years ago when Trent Miles was interviewing. You really only had three or four finalists. Willie Fritz was a finalist and the previous athletic director, Cheryl Levick, didn't want to wait for Sam Houston State in the FCS playoffs. She knew how important this hire was going to be, moving from FCS to FBS. You had guys like Shane Beamer, who's currently the special teams coach, who was a finalist. Bill Lazor, who was offensive coordinator and bounced around. He's been at University of Virginia and several others. And there was a couple other names. But, Trent Miles was the guy who was the program builder and really needed to overhaul this. And quite honestly, there was a lot of discipline and academic issues and other things off the field that Trent and his staff really, really have cleaned up. And quite frankly, just need to deserve credit for. I know the results on the field weren't great. There's no denying that. Certainly, it's been one of the worst FBS programs in the last 4 or 5 years. But I think off the field, I think this job is a whole lot more attractive, and it's why I think you had so much interest in this job.
Oh yeah, absolutely. That's a testament to everything that Trent Miles put into this program. And actually, that phone was a caller calling in with their question, and even though I know the answer to the question, I do want to bring it up because we are going to talk a little bit about Trent Miles here. And the caller wanted to know, was there any blemish basically on Coach Miles' record while he was here? And the easy answer to that is no. There was no violations. There was no academic issues. There was nothing whatsoever.
No rest.
There was, right. Yeah, nothing at all that any of us know, and I may not be familiar with everything, but I know you would know, nothing come across the radar. I've talked to Doug Robertson from the AJC. He goes, no, because we would have reported on it. There's nothing that's come across the board, and you almost don't get that in a college environment. So, I mean, that's just more testament to Coach Miles and what he put into this program.
No question. It's an atmosphere. It's an environment, and there's a lot of guys with NFL experience on this staff too. And they ran it and told them, look, you need to be professional or you're going to be moved on. And I think there was an expectation level there, and certainly coming off the bowl game in 2015, there was a heightened expectation there. You had so many starters back on defense, a ton of, playmakers back on offense, and, quite honestly, injuries are a part of the game of football. It's a very violent, very physical game. But just the injuries just continued to mount up. And again, you were forced to play basically 10 of the 19 signees this year who a lot of them probably were pinned into redshirt, but were shoved into action. Guys like Juwan Nobles who had to play, guys like that who probably, needed a full year to develop or maybe, not playing as many snaps as they needed to. You can't ever replace a guy like Penny Hart and his presence on this football team and his production, quite frankly. And we saw that especially in the punt return game as well. And I just put it out last week, the special teams was just abysmal. I mean, you had a punt return unit that officially caught six punt returns for 10 total yards. That probably is the worst in the country. I didn't look it up just for figuring it probably was the worst, but not being able to to do anything and help your defense out really just demoralizes, a unit that quite honestly was one of the top 50 in the country, and credit to Jesse Minter and his staff.
Oh, I think they were top 10, honestly, and that's not a biased thing. I think they ranked like 8th or 9th for most of the year. If you kind of scratch those last couple games off, I think they were just tired and beat up by then, the defense was. But, you know, as you say, the offense and the special teams didn't help the defense out all that much, and nobody took more accountability player-wise as far as that than Connor Manning, who finishes – make sure I get his numbers right. He was 207 – he had 207 completions out of 373 attempts. He threw 13 interceptions. That's good for about 55%. He threw for 2,684 yards and 16 touchdowns. I mean, for a collegiate quarterback, 16 touchdowns, 13 interceptions, I'm good with that. That's better than Blake Bortles, and he starts in the NFL.
Yeah, and I think the biggest thing ultimately, you know, he wasn't helped by young receivers either. There were moments with some of his younger guys, and not to pick on Juwan Nobles per se, but is just getting used to being a wide receiver, period. You know, he was a wildcat quarterback in high school. He was a guy that just has elite track speed, who got the ball snapped to him and took off. Or, you know, in some of these camps and things like that, he was just learning to run a go route. So if there are nuances to the wide receiver position on, you know, option routes and different things like that, he's often not in the right space. You also got hurt, you know, Keith Rucker was banged up pretty much all year. And that's a humongous loss in not only the running game, but the passing game as well, and just his presence on the field. You know, Ari Word certainly came on and has the talent, you know, as much talent as I've seen as somebody his size in a long time, certainly here at Georgia State, but I would say even at the G5 level, you know, he has NFL wide receiver size at tight end and will continue to get better because he just works at it that much. But, you know, he can't play every snap. You just go down. Now, I think Connor, you know, there were certainly throws that he wants back. I think, sure, you know, his performance against Wisconsin is definitely NFL scout worthy. I mean, he took apart a defense that, you know, certainly stands apart in the Big Ten, who has stood up to, you know, Ohio State and Michigan and various other top 15 schools. And that's a credit to him. And, you know, something that we often forget, you know, he sat out a full 2.5 years basically from college football and only played one game before he got here. So he hadn't seen the field a whole lot. I think he adjusted. I do think, you know, certainly he gets the starting nod. You know, you would see unless the new coaching staff brings in a quarterback or two, you know, he's going to be the guy that leads through spring, or at least gets the ball first in the first day of practice there in March.
Absolutely, and it is possible, and that's something I have brought up. And when you get a new coaching staff, obviously that means people that were gonna follow that coach to South Carolina can sometimes follow him to his new destination. Sometimes that means other people will decommit other places and come here, and you know, those kinds of things happen. They could bring in their own guy, but not just on the field, but especially in the press conferences, we really saw Connor grow as a person and grow as a student athlete and a leader. And, you know, interim coach Lapano, in the only press conference he did at the Georgia Dome, said, look, if you go back and look at the numbers, Connor is actually ahead at this point of his career here than Nick was. And at first we all kind of looked puzzled, but when you go back and look at the numbers and the development, Connor is a little bit ahead, and it helps having Robert Davis, who is obviously probably going to go pretty high in that little event in, what is it, April or May now, and he's probably going to play on a lot of Sundays, Thursdays, and Mondays next year. But, I mean, the development of Glenn Smith as he flipped back to his original position of wide receiver, Todd Boyd still a great option out there. You mentioned Rucker and Ari. I mean, Kendrick Dorms over there. Juwan Nobles looks like he's going to be able to step in. We're going to get Penny Hart back. Not sure who Penny Hart is. I'm sure he plays basketball somewhere. But, I mean, the weapons are all here. It's going to be interesting. Obviously, there's a new offensive coordinator, so it's going to be a different scheme. You know, I hope that Connor and Aaron Winchester and Jaquez Parks are given a fair shot at taking over the duties. But to me, it is Connor's to lose.
No doubt about it. And I'm interested to see, too, what happens with Amir Scaife. He out on Twitter today talking about that he was, you know, thankful for an opportunity. We certainly know that he quit on Coach Miles, left the team and was not interested in basically being a tight end anymore. You know, you may just potentially bring him back to be an arm in camp in spring, but I don't see any way realistically he rejoins this team as a quarterback. And, no. You know, who knows? Stranger things have happened, but I certainly don't see him being a contributor on this team moving forward.
No, I definitely don't. And, you know, obviously something that the new coach and the new staff are going to have to work on is establishing some sort of run game. To me, Kyler Neal was by far the standout for the simple fact that the second leading rusher was a quarterback. But, I mean, there's options. Most of them are speed and corner guys. I like Kyler because he's one of those just run you over bulldozers. Is there anybody coming in this upcoming class that could maybe unseat one of these guys? Or do you kind of agree with me that we need to ride high on Kyler and accent him with the Darius Stubbs, Glenn Smiths, and Trey Barnetts of the world?
Yeah, I think it's interesting. I mean, they have a current commit out of Milton. Cam Adams is a little bit smaller, shiftier guy, but he's been really, really productive for a 6A school in Milton. And, you know, I will be interested to see what the new staff thinks about him. As of yesterday, he had not talked to Coach Elliott and the staff yet. Now, I know, again, you know, getting a hold of guys can be difficult back and forth. I talked to one of the current commits, and he basically said, yeah, I've basically been texting back and forth with some of the assistant coaches and kind of going from there. So, you know, the contacting is a little bit different. You know, I would imagine because of what Coach Elliott has kind of described in some of his media interviews, he's interested in a one-back set, you know, a little bit bigger of a running back, two tight ends and things like that. So you certainly need to get at least one tight end in here. And I would be mildly surprised if another running back wasn't in the mix. But at the same time, you look at the roster, there's six scholarship running backs coming back. So the tough part about it is, you know, Kendrick Dorn, you know, he's been out for the season the second consecutive year. So how much can you rely on him potentially? How healthy is he now? I like Kenny personally. He's a great kid. I think he's just been snake bit, quite honestly, and was in really, really good shape. Then got hurt again in 2016, you know, spring practice there. So it's difficult. I can see him bringing in at least one running back, possibly two. But to me, you have so many more needs just because you just hemorrhage people on the defensive side of the ball. You got to start on the defensive line and especially at safety as well, losing four seniors.
Yeah. Yeah, that's definitely going to be something interesting is the way this defense rebounds. Because like you said, they are losing a lot of key people and especially a secondary that you could almost put our starting four and even if you want to go a couple of the backups, put those six against almost anybody in college, and they'll pretty much shut them down.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Something interesting, and I did hear it early part of the season and confirmed it again today. Safety Bryant Williams is actually going to petition the NCAA because it was a re-injury of his back that forced him to miss quite a bit of the season to try to get another year back. He did graduate today, so congratulations to Little Bully. Is what I nickname him. Of course, he's a Panther legacy. His brother Arthur Williams played tight end on the first ever team, and is a staple at George State football alumni event. So, good luck and congratulations to Brian. Hopefully, the NCAA looks the right way, and he's able to come back and play again because he quite honestly lost two full seasons to some back injuries, and thankfully for his sake, he's healthy now.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And, you know, we can't really finish up the review here of it without – I got to throw this out because it's probably – now that we have a head coach, it's the number one asked question, or at least the one I get asked. If you want, I can throw out some names, and if you really don't want to say, you can plead the fifth on this because it's kind of an under-the-gun thing. But of these guys that are graduating and moving on – are there a handful of them that you see that could potentially play on Sundays next year? I mean, obviously Robert Davis, but, you know, Bobby Bakers of the world and you know, such like that. Do you see some of these guys maybe being able to play on the upper level?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think Robert Davis is the next guy to get drafted. There's no question about that. You know, the scouts really did like Keith Rucker. The biggest thing about it is, again, the injury question. He's as tough as nails, and we know that from following, you know, between the shoulder injuries, between the rib injuries, just things like that. The kid is got, you know, the guts, and he's got the pedigree. His father certainly played in the NFL. You know, he'll get a look and just make sure he'll be healthy and really get his numbers down for pro day.
You know, Keith couldn't be any nicer.
Also, Keith is the best. I mean, that's one of the guys certainly that I'll miss around the program, and hopefully he's able to go on to an NFL career because, you know, I think he certainly deserves it. You know, he's had some tough luck injuries, and he's just continued to play through them. Yeah, I mean, you mentioned Bobby Baker. Bobby's going to have to gain some weight. I think, you know, he's certainly rangy enough at 6'2". He really needs to be about 205 or 210, not in the 190, 195 range, and really prove he can come down in the box and hit somebody. He's definitely proven that he can cover, that there's no issue there. He can grasp a scheme. And I think, you know, he's going to need a solid workout. I think, you know, with Robert getting invited to the NFLPA Senior Bowl, it will force, again, this year more scouts to come out and see the pro day. In the past, you know, I've come down and, Jeremy, I'll get you the information too while we're talking about it and invite you down as well. Pro Day is always fun. It's closed to the general public, but it is open to invited media and such. So I've been basically since year two, basically when Christo Bilicchini had his Pro Day, and I'm using air quotes here for your listeners so that I know they can't see it. Radio is a visual medium, but there may have been about two or three, you know, staff members who were probably doing Coach Curry a favor. And then all of a sudden, Crystal gets drafted by the Raiders, and off we go. Now the NFL needs to come to Georgia State, and now you have a starting kicker with the Saints and Will Lutz. And you have, at the time, Albert Wilson, who put up double-digit starts in the NFL. And you know, Georgia State's becoming that place where NFL, you know, teams come to scout players. And you know, they really like, you know, some of the younger guys. They like Chandon Sullivan, who will be a senior next year. They really like the size and speed of McKendy Cheridor. He's a guy to keep an eye on for next year. But yeah, I think those three, I think, are probably the guys that get looks. Not really anybody else jumps out from the senior class that probably is going to get an NFL look, but you never know. I mean, that's, you know, you still have opportunities in Canada. I mean, that's where Nick Arbuckle, you know, he signed a 3-year deal, had lunch with Nick today. He's back from Calgary and is doing some football camps and different things like that to keep himself busy while he finishes up his degree in spring, and he'll be headed back out the end of spring to head up to Calgary's training camp. So always good to catch up with number four.
Oh, absolutely. It was fun. He was actually back for the Southern game. So when they were hoisting that trophy, it was really just a good moment because of, I mean, everybody had Georgia State counted out of that game, and to go up 2-1 in the series and get to hoist the trophy the first year they make it. And as soon as all that happens, I turned around from the crowd because it's fun to get in those, you know, just those kind of moments and see how the crowd was reacting to the big win. The first two people three people that I see that weren't Keith Rucker or Bobby Baker, because I seem to always run into them all the time anyway, but the first three people I see in this order was Nick Arbuckle, Connor Manning, and Hudson Mason. That is one of the most unique trios you can have at quarterback, and yet they were all a part of that win and that big win, and they all had just completely different reactions, all positive, but completely different reactions to that Southern loss.
Yeah, no question. And they understand it. I mean, you look at basically – you know, two guys from California, you know, in Manning and Arbuckle, and they kind of didn't grow up with this rivalry, certainly, as I've tried to explain to many of our readers on our site and people around the community down here. Georgia State and Georgia Southern have been playing in sports since the 60s, so this rivalry isn't exactly new. I've talked to folks who have a whole lot more gray hair than I, who talk about going down to Statesboro and beating them in basketball. in the 70s and even the 80s. The rivalry has been certainly cranked up a bunch in the last few years with basketball. But, yeah, I mean, Georgia State, just the way they went down there and just punished Georgia Southern. And to come back, and a lot of the uncertainty certainly around their coaching staff, Georgia State has already fired their coaches. So you had that going on. But, you know, just the way that game was, I mean, this is what rivalries are built by. You know, you want blowout wins. You want close losses. You know, that's what's going to build it. And I promise you, next year in Statesboro, there'll be a few more Georgia State fans probably that head down there. And, you know, folks who think, hey, look, you're looking for a three-game win streak in a series that, I'll be honest, I've talked to people on the Georgia Southern side that they didn't think a two-game win streak for Georgia State was coming in the first 10 years of this rivalry, for sure.
Right. Oh, yeah, absolutely. And it's that's what I explained to people. It was actually the first game I ever covered for Georgia State was the first game they played against Southern a couple years ago. And I see them not really get ran over, but they got, you know, punched in the mouth a little bit by Southern. And Southern's like, kind of had the mantra, and I'm paraphrasing because they don't actually say it this way. They're actually pretty nice, at least towards us. They said, well, we don't really think Georgia State is ready to compete on our level. We don't really see this as an in-state rivalry or a Sun Belt rivalry. And then the 34-7 happened. And they were like, well, that's fluky, and we had this issue and that issue. I was like, all right, well, you know, coming into this year, I was like, we're going to really see how things are going to iron out. And then Georgia State wins that game, and I went, based off the way the three games I've seen, as rivalry on.
Yeah, no doubt about it. I mean, there's no debate anymore. And we know Georgia State, doesn't have many natural rivals. Within their sports. I mean, just bouncing from league to league in the last 10, 15 years. I mean, the Colonial wasn't really a good league for the Panthers to develop those rivalries in all sports. But, you know, what I think, and I wrote a couple of years ago that it was good for both of the programs and that they really needed each other. And, you know, I got laughed at and had a lot of folks on social media and Twitter who were basically saying, well, you're just looking for clicks or this and that and the other. But, you know, you look back 3 years later, listen, without Georgia State, Georgia Southern's getting run over by their rival App State, and they don't really have any other natural rivals. Right. just the result of the Georgia State-Georgia Southern game, caused such angst within the fan base. And quite honestly, you know, I grew up in major college football, going to major college games down in Tallahassee with Florida State. Rivalries are great for fans because, you know what, especially in football, you get to have the upper hand, or you get to, you know, get to hear it from your friends and family and other rivals for 364 days. So you have a full year to basically stew on it. And I think that's the fun part. That's what college athletics is all about, you know. We've seen it certainly in the state, you know, with Georgia and Georgia Tech, and, you know, Georgia State and Georgia Southern are fighting for that next seat at the table, basically. And, you know, neither program will be Georgia, neither program will be Georgia Tech anytime soon, for sure. But, you know, it is a big, you know, big time atmosphere, and certainly hope that continues down in Statesboro in 2017.
Sure, and not to veer too far off the course here, but you did mention something I wanted to mention, and I will allow you a small rebuttal because, I do respect you and have, and you are a really good friend. But just so you know, on the 30th of this month, I can save you a lot of time of tuning in to see those Seminoles because my Michigan Wolverines are going to squash them like a bug. So, I mean, I can save you a lot of time and heartache of, maybe on the 30th you can get ready to watch a different bowl game and not the Orange Bowl.
Ouch, that's shot fired. Well, I know you and I will have to part company that day, my friend.
Yep, we will have to agree to disagree, at least for that day. I thought it very funny that your team and my team are actually going to match up. I look forward to the matchup. I actually think it's going to be really good. I'm in a couple contests to win tickets, but I also have reached out about Peach Bowl credentials, so we'll see how that works. I'm either going to be really busy right around my favorite day of the year, or maybe I'm going to sit on my couch and watch it. In fact, if I'm in town, maybe we'll hook up and watch that game.
Yeah, it sounds good. My uncle is a huge South Florida booster and alum, and he was trying to pry me over to Birmingham to watch South Florida and South Carolina. But I don't think that's going to work out. He is going to take my dad. So I will pass along the greetings from you to him, as I know you guys don't get to do your game day routine anymore.
I know, right? I've really missed that. I get in such a routine of covering the Georgia State games of hanging out with your dad pretty much the whole game and us probably eating more little chocolate candies from the Mars group is probably more than we should. And then obviously getting to hang out with you during games, it's going through withdrawals now.
Yeah, exactly. That's the fun. You know, I try to tell people I've been around Georgia State when there was no football. So, you know, it's a whole lot of fun to have it. Certainly we'd love to win more down the concrete campus, but I'm very, very interested to see what Coach Elliott's going to bring. He's got a couple assistant coaches now. We did report that early part of the week. Brought an offensive line coach with him from South Carolina, and also now, as of this afternoon, has an offensive coordinator named synonymous with college football and Travis Trickett. And excited to see what those guys can bring. They're already out recruiting. Been talking to a bunch of high school prospects and a couple of junior college guys, but primarily just hit the high schools so far that I've seen in the state of Georgia and in South Carolina. So, like I said, I call it the silly season, man. I mean, recruiting, it's every single day. A lot of needs, a lot of guys, prospects getting evaluated and reevaluated, and you know, there's still 12 current commits to the previous staff, and they are committed to the school. And as of right now, they're all 12 are on board, but one of them just got an offer from Baylor, so we'll see if they'll be sticking around or not.
Yep, we'll definitely have to check that out. Now, Coach Trickett comes from FAU. Is that the same FAU that's the new home of one Lane Kiffin?
That is correct. And from what I understand, his brother is Clint Trickett. So if you are familiar with the Netflix series Last Chance U, his brother is the offense coordinator at East Mississippi Community College. Of course, his dad is the offensive line coach for Florida State, Rick Trickett. So he's a name that is certainly synonymous with college football. You know, didn't have, you know, a huge year there with FAU. I mean, they were in the top 70, 75 in that neighborhood in total offense. He was only there 1 year. Really had a little bit youngish quarterbacks there, as well as some struggles on the offensive line. But, you know, the most impressive part of his resume, in my opinion, is from the FCS ranks. You know, he took Samford over in Birmingham, and some Georgia State fans will remember they came in here 3 years ago and knocked off the Panthers the first game of the season in 2013. That was the infamous opening kickoff to the season, returned 100 yards. So he kind of knew that something wasn't going to go very well once that started. But their offense has gotten really, really, but progressively better when he was there, recruiting solid quarterbacks, solid skill position players, and he wants to play up tempo, and as everyone else does in college football, it seems nowadays. But he's got a lot of skill positions, like we just talked about. We highlighted in that recap. There's a lot of skill position players that are on this roster. So you add some quality offensive linemen to fill in the depths. I mean, that's the other side. You've got four out of the five offensive linemen returning. The only person you lose off this offensive line from the starting lineup is Michael Ivory. So go find yourself a left guard, and this team could be pretty potent pretty quick.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And, we'll attack the elephant in the room here and talk a little bit about Sean Elliott. Here's the thing that I have learned, at least through either your articles or the internet, because I did kind of know who he was. He has spent the last handful of years under either Will Muschamp or Steve Spurrier, including the interim when he took over for Spurrier a couple years ago. But he is the former co-offensive coordinator of South Carolina, 20-plus years of experience in winning programs. I thought that was really cool that was in the write-up for him. Let's see. The last 7 years he's been under Muschamp or Spurrier. And he is a offensive line coach and the co-offensive coordinator as of 2012 over there. What else do we need to know about Coach Elliott?
I think he's tremendously energetic. I think the media, as we've seen already, if you listen to any of his media clips or your listeners have, I mean, he's very, very affable. There's a lot of people that gravitate toward him. He's very much a player's coach. I've talked to some folks that know him from his App State days. And, you know, he's going to be a guy the players and the coaches love. They want to run through a wall. There's certainly some YouTube clips in his first game coaching, you know, South Carolina after Spurrier resigned basically midweek and just handed the head of the job to Elliott there. Just kind of getting those guys prepared and locked in to beat Vanderbilt. It was kind of a tough hand he was dealt. There's a lot of detractors and folks that look at it and say, yeah, well, he coached a team that lost to the Citadel. Yep, absolutely. And I'm sure he would tell you all about that and own that, as most head coaches do when their teams lose. But, you know, just to have them not completely off the rails in a team, you know, in a program, quite honestly, that could have fallen completely apart. And something that just always impresses me, you know, he was the only position coach or assistant that stayed, you know, from Spurrier staff to Will Muschamp's staff. So to have Muschamp understand his value and offensive line, and quite honestly, you know, the offensive line at Georgia State has been a question mark really since, you know, the program started. It's been, you've had good talent, guys like Ulrich John, who's currently with the Arizona Cardinals, but you've also had really bad, inconsistent play, and I don't think it's talent necessarily. I think the talent has been there. You just, you know, don't know about the development. Guys that need to get better and bigger and stronger. There will be an expectation here. You know, as I told our friend Chris Hilliard one time, Trent Miles was a wide receiver in college. And right. I will never worry about the wide receiver core while Trent Miles is the head coach. I will probably go ahead and make that statement now that we probably won't have to worry about the offensive line, because Sean Elliott was an offensive lineman. So he can guarantee the offensive line will have his eyeballs in film review and certainly on the practice field.
Oh, sure. Absolutely. And when he was first named coach, myself and Woody Bass, a good friend of ours, were debating some things back and forth. Woody said he thought he played at UGA. Did he play at UGA?
Who's that? You talking about Elliott?
Elliott.
Yeah, he played at App State.
App State, okay. That's what I was thinking. But either way, I won't hold it against him that he played at App State, because I knew he had played there at some point and then he became a coach. I may slightly hold it against him that he had a lot to do with Appalachian State beating my Wolverines in the biggest upset in college history. But at the same time, I don't like to make excuses for teams I pull for or teams I'm a part of. I'll just simply say we got outplayed by a better team, and congratulations to him. But I do have my first question I'm going to ask him, and I'm going to run it by you first right here and our live audience to see if what you think his reaction could be to it.
All right, fire away.
My first question to our new coach, Elliott, is going to be, do you consider South Carolina the real USC?
I like it. I'm okay with that.
Yeah. I think we all agree that it's the real USC, because, like I said, I'm not a fan of the Trojans so much. I respect a lot of what they've done in college, but as far as I'm concerned, the real USC is over here on the East Coast.
I'll let you toss that one, and then I'll let him get back to football or the roster or something like that. We'll plan to be at the same press conference or time that at that point.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I'll have you there in case things go south and I don't have time to grab a helmet or something, you know. But, no, I do have actual football questions, but I did want to lead with that just to kind of see where his humor and my humor are and to see if these press conferences could really be interesting or if they're going to go really good.
No doubt. Yeah, he's definitely an energetic guy. You know, he had a reputation early in his career of not loving the media. But then again, he was an offensive line coach, so I'm not sure how many people probably came and seeked out the offensive line coach unless something wasn't going well.
Right. Yeah, and to be fair, he didn't meet media people like us early on, so, I mean, there's no way you can't like us, right?
Exactly right. No doubt about it. We got a lot of good information, too. I got to give a plug to my guys who cover South Carolina, our 24/7 sister site, The Big Spur. Did a great job. They're actually the ones who broke the story that he was going to get hired. I know a lot of those guys over there personally, and Chris Hilliard has worked at points for them. And you know, it certainly has been applauded so far. The hires have been, you know, applauded. I got to talk to Rusty Mansell, who's one of our national guys at 24/7, and he said so far, you know, it's you know, he's really, from what he's heard so far, things have gone well. You know, and you know, the biggest key is, as we always know, Georgia is such a talent-rich state with so many prospects going into you know, FBS D1 ranks. You just have to attack the state and convince some of these guys to stay home. You know, you only need 25. That's all you can take. So, you know, if you can do that and really evaluate and find the best 25 guys, you know, and fill out your needs, I think this program is going to continue to ascend. And, you know, hopefully 2016 was just a blip on the radar before it launches again.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And let's see, I think we got everything. We talked about Coach Elliott. We talked about Coach Trickett. I don't have the offensive line coach's name in front of me, but do you know his name?
Yeah, Cedric Williams, former South Carolina Gamecock offensive lineman, and had been last year was on their was at Newberry College for a couple of years coaching O-line there, and went back last year to be the assistant strength and conditioning coach. You know, kind of one of those perfect jobs, you know, for a former player, come back in and just stay close just in case a job pops up and go. That's a position that commonly happens. You want to get around the strength staff. You want to get around, you know, the administrative side of things, just to stay close enough, just in case a position coach or a spot with the football staff opens up. You know, you're not recruiting necessarily, but he's very familiar with that, and has been very, very busy. By my count, up to double-digit offers handed out for offensive linemen in the state of Georgia so far in the two or three days he's been on campus. So, you know, he's aggressive. You know, he's a younger guy as well. I think that's the thing you're going to see overall with his staff, is they're going to be younger guys, really, really hungry, getting out to recruit, getting out and speaking with the high schoolers once the dead period is lifted, but it really evaluating, you know, even the current commits and current offers. You know, it's been kind of cool to see from my side of things as well, and a credit to the former staff as well, where they're reconfirming offers, you know, of guys that the previous staff offered. And that tells you a lot about the evaluation of Coach Miles and his staff. You know, that they go out and you have another staff that says, you know what, yeah, I agree, we should offer this kid, we still should pursue it, and not necessarily pulling that scholarship offer.
Yeah, absolutely. And a lot of people have also asked, you know, with a new coach coming in like this, how's that going to affect recruiting? And I'm not going to necessarily say it's better, because it's hard for me to judge, because I didn't have my finger on the pulse like you usually do. Than the Trent Miles regime, but this is the first head coach that can actually sit in somebody's living room and go, "You saw the screenshots, don't you want to play at Turner Field?"
Exactly. It's a huge. It cannot be understated, and I think Coach Elliott has done a really good job so far explaining that. You know, this program desperately needed something in some place that was their own. The Dome never was Georgia State's building, even from when it opened up, you know, September 2nd, 2010, with almost 31,000 people in the building. I was there that night. I can tell you it was a special night. It was very surreal to see that many people care about Georgia State football. And, you know, then basically the struggles basically that ensued, you know, shortly thereafter, trying to attract fans back. And, you know, we knew very quickly that FCS football wasn't going to work, you know, bringing in the various teams from, you know, the Delawares to the Rhode Islands to the Villanovas and different things like that. It wasn't going to sell. You know, this program needed to, you know, play bigger name opponents. And, you know, I think it's going to be very interesting to me to see starting next year, not only playing at, you know, the refurbished former Turner Field, but having a team like Memphis come in, you know, they're on the schedule in 2017. So they, you know, certainly have won some games. You put a guy in the NFL in Paxton Lynch. It's a short enough drive where folks from Memphis can, you know, hop in the car or take a short plane ride and come on down. You know, it should be a good atmosphere certainly there. Won't necessarily predict that be the first sellout in Georgia State Stadium. but it could be. It's certainly on. You know, they could do that. And I'm very interested to see how the layout happens. We won't see, you know, immediately. We won't see what was in those pictures. You know, the construction and different things like that will continue to take place in phases. But I firmly expect the spring game, in the Georgia State spring game, to be there in April, and then to open up the stadium sometime in and around the 1st of September, 2017, and they'll be here before we know it. I can tell you that much.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And complete honor and privilege to have you on again, Ben. I'm not going to keep you much longer. The Nutcracker could be calling at this point. I know you had a busy weekend saving the show. You and your amazing family saving that show over there. Impeccable job. But, you know, hey, we'll have to catch maybe a basketball game or some baseball, because baseball is just right around the corner, as I teased earlier on. Hoping to get Greg Frady on. I'm looking forward to it. He seems energized by it. We just got to figure out the scheduling thing.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Greg's one of the best, and I'm privileged to call him a friend, and I see him very frequently around campus, and we've texted back and forth. I'm excited for him to get his new facility as well over there. I know he won't get it yet, but being able now to recruit to that, and I know he signed a tremendous recruiting class. I'm sure he'll tell you all about that, he always is nervous about signing too good of a class, guys that he'll potentially lose to the Major League Baseball draft in June. But just excited for him and glad he's still here. You know, it's one of those situations too. Like I said, I got to know him personally over the last 10, 11 years, and just a Georgia State guy, you know, somebody that wants to be here desperately and wants to succeed. And I think that's a lot of fun. You don't have a lot of homegrown Georgia State guys that are still around. And especially involved in athletics. You know, I told him, I said, I want him to be working, you know, once he retires and rides off into the sunset, not to go too far away, because we're going to need him for fundraising. We're going to need him for other things. So hopefully he keeps himself busy and we can find a spot for him in the new Georgia State Stadium when athletics moves over there as well. But, you know, it's a lot of fun, man. I mean, basketball is winning big right now over Alabama A&M team that is still seeking their first win on the year. So a lot of fun on the horizon. And, you know, we'll be talking in January, like you said, Georgia State baseball and, you know, signing days in February, and we look up and March is here and we have spring practice. So then the cycle begins again.
Absolutely. But enjoy the holidays. Merry Christmas to you and your entire family. Make sure to tell your dad I said hello. If you run into Coach Frady, let him know the impact. We'll find him shortly. And I'll let you have a great rest of your evening, because I know you're busy and I'm busy and probably neither one of us have eaten dinner.
Hey, no worries, man. I appreciate you having me. Always enjoy it. And happy holidays. Merry Christmas to you and your family as well. And we'll catch up soon, man.
Absolutely. Have a great rest of your night, Ben. And that was Ben Moore, of course, of 24/7 Sports and GSU Panther Talk. Just a fantastic guy. Like I said, I get the people, I get the experts on, I get the great people on. These are people that I talk to all the time that I know you guys talk to as well. I want to get those people on so that we can talk about all the big issues. We can get deep into it. He can tell us about Coach Elliott. You know, he can tell us about recruiting stories here and there. So always great having Ben on. Just fantastic. But that's actually going to do it for us tonight. I appreciate you guys tuning in each and every week. This is kind of the season finale. We're kind of wrapping up football. We will be on break till somewhere late in January. We'll let you guys know exactly when. We're hoping that that very first show of the new year will be the Greg Frady one. If it's not, we'll do something cool anyway. But I'm Jeremy the Impact York. We'll see you guys next week, or we'll see you guys in early January. Merry Christmas. Happy holidays. Happy New Year, and I got a birthday somewhere in between. We'll see you guys in January. Go Panthers! Rocking this contagious, monkey business outrageous. Just confess, your girl admits that we the shit. FRESH, we fresh, GEF, that's right, we different. We definite, BET, we reppin' it. So, turn me up, turn me up. Pump it louder, pump it louder, pump it louder, and tell it.
need to ease on up. You wanna act on gut, but do get shut like Flavor Shuck. Chick say she ain't down, but chick backstage when we in town. She like men on drum, she wanna hit and run. Yeah, that's the scene, that's what we do, that's who we be.
B-L-A-C-K-E-Y-A-D-D to the E, then the A to the S. When we play, you shake your ass.
Shake it, shake it,
shake it, girl. Make sure you don't break it, girl.
Turn it up.
In the scene, breaking on down for the B-boys and B-girls, we're in the do they thing. Pump it, louder, come on, don't stop, and keep me going, do it, let's get it on, move it,
come on, baby, do it.